You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
It's alive! Which is kind of a film reference and a way of segueing into Josh Nelson. You can read his blog at filmology.com. That's with a PH. Josh, welcome.
Good afternoon. Every time someone says pod, I think of Hal. Open the pod doors, please, Hal.
I quite like the pods in Gravity, actually.
Yes.
I loved Gravity.
I know.
Fantastic film. Actually, there was a list on one website today saying it was one of the 7 revolutionary films of the last 20 years and that it will change the way they make movies.
Visually, if nothing else, absolutely.
Apparently, they had Sandra Bullock and George Clooney were strapped into these machines. So to create that gravity effect, they spent their whole time there, sort of from their neck to their waist, they were strapped into these things. And you know the warhorse people?
Yep.
They were used, they had puppeteers moving them around, and that was how they conveyed the gravity stuff. Anyway.
Wonderful.
Let's talk myth and legend. Josh and I have both seen Thor 2. It's the second installment. I read today that Chris Hemsworth will have done 6 Thor films in a decade. I mean, that's a lot of time. Let's have a listen to the trailer, but 1300-222-774, your favourite myth and legend films.
Some believe that before the universe, there was nothing. They're wrong. There was darkness.
You must be truly desperate to come to me for help.
You should know that when you betray me, I will kill you.
When do we start?
Anthony Hopkins, Idris Elba, Christopher Eccleston, and
Tom
other guy,
Hiddleston.
Tom Hiddleston, who is, of course, the baddie. He is Loki. It's the second installment. Marvel have gone from bankruptcy to movie juggernaut tentpoledom. Josh, tell me about Thor 2.
This is the follow-up to the Kenneth Branagh version we got a couple of years ago, which I wasn't a fan of at all. This one's directed by Alan Taylor, who's got a TV background. Most of his pedigree is HBO TV shows like Game of Thrones and Sopranos, so he comes with pretty good pedigree.
I love the fact they're plundering the quality TV stuff.
Well, you know, it makes sense. It was always going to come back the other way at some point. Hollywood's not that stupid when there's money involved. Look, the setup for this film, I mean, you probably got it just from that 30 seconds of a trailer. We have a series of dark elves led by Christopher Eccleston.
It's very Tolkien-ish, isn't it?
Oh, the whole film is very Tolkien.
Is it is that character the evil elf? Is that from an original comic book somewhere down the line?
I'm not sure. Look, I have to confess, I'm not a big fan of Thor as a character, or in terms of comic books growing up, that was not a character that really appealed to me at all.
He's the odd one out.
So we have the dark elves from the dark world who want to impose darkness on all of the 9 realms in a mystical happening called the Convergence, where the 9 realms come together and there's sort of portals which run between all of them. And
yet another bridge between worlds.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. And Thor has to save his love bunny, Natalie Portman, on Earth.
Love bunny.
Well, that just came to me then. I'm not sure that's her official character name.
No, I don't think it is. I think Natalie Portman's official character name is most useless and least credible Marvel character.
Since what was that character in the Bond film played by Charlie Sheen's ex? Christmas Jones, whatever it was.
I don't know that.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a nuclear physicist. Okay. Anyway, we digress. Look, you know, this film is messy in many ways. The script was being rewritten on
set. Paper thin plot.
But it does do a lot of stuff that I really enjoyed. And I think a lot of it has to do with, apparently Joss Whedon came in on set because he's still, you know, this is still part of his baby franchise, and started rewriting scenes on the go.
Aren't all the funny bits him?
Well, yeah, it feels like a script that has very much a soapy melodrama. Like, Thor is basically, he's a Fabio character in a pseudo-Shakespearean mythical film where Whedon came along and went, this needs some humour, and gives most of the jokes to Tom Hiddleston, who is really the reason to see this film, I think. He holds down this film and owns every scene he's in, a bit like Benedict Cumberbatch in the second Star Trek film. You know, there's no surprise that they're both English actors who come from a really strong dramatic background, but can play comedy really well.
Yeah. Well, it's great that he can be both funny and genuinely evil, and yet he has a scene with Thor, Christopher Hemsworth, his brother, where it's actually they really seem like brothers. It's skilled acting, even if it's dressed up in schlocky cinema.
And look, from a visual perspective. I think this, in terms of the visual design of this film, the costuming, the sets, the character design, the creature makeup, is probably the best of any Marvel film we've seen in the series. And that's a pretty big feather in the cap. Look, a really luscious film, but yeah, it's that detail in the design. It hasn't totally gone for the let's just sort of rip off everything that's been before. Even though a few of the set pieces feel like a bit sort of stolen from Star Wars here, and the score is bordering on plagiarism of Howard Shore's score for Lord of the Rings.
That's exactly what I thought.
The Thor theme, is almost identical. I wished we'd cut and paste it together.
But it's nice music.
It is, but it's Howard Shore's music. So sure. Look, it is a bit like that. The other thing that I really love about this film and recommends the film is the final sequence. They get really right. I think the climactic action, they monopolize the idea of the multiple portholes, the worlds bleeding into each other in a really fun way. And it's that climactic fight between Thor and the Dark Elf that.
An unrecognizable Chris Ferguson.
Well, to a point, the cheekbones are still there in the jaw, but that differentiates the film and the failures of, say, Man of Steel, where it's all shot in wide shot. It's just CGI bouncing around in screen. They keep it in close with the actors, so you actually feel engaged with the plot. So, look, there's a lot of smarts about this film, and as far as sequels goes, this is streaks ahead of the first Thor film,
yeah,
I think.
Totally. No, look, it's a decent film. Look, Thor is the film we're talking about, of course, with the Aussie Chris Hemsworth, who's now living in England, and he does everything else on the side, as I mentioned, six films in a decade as Thor. I don't know. Still, it's going to give him lots of opportunities. I'd love to know your myth and legend films, though. Fantastic. The very first text, Lady Hawk.
Yep.
Got to be one of the best ever. Also mentioning Mists of Avalon and A Knight's Tale, which is a Heath Ledger film.
It is.
Which is actually quite fun. Someone else mentioning on myths and legends. I'd love to know your favourite myth or legend film. You can go Tolkien if you want, but there are many others out there. 1300-222-774, of course, is the phone number. Any film based on any myth and legend. Clash of the Titans, fail. We can mention that only because it's got an Aussie connection with Sam Worthington. Myths and legends, though, this text says, any clues as to the Doctor Who 50th anniversary film? Waiting in nerdish anticipation. Go. Is it out just for a day, or is it out and then it's on an extended season? How's it work?
From what I've been looking overseas as well, I think that there's a live broadcast on the 23rd, and then the 25th they have a theatrical season.
Okay, so it's at the cinema for a few weeks.
Yeah.
And which doctors are in it? Is it Peter Capaldi, or...?
I think it might be the point at which they lead into the crossover. So it builds up to the regeneration.
Okay, so it's Matt Smith and then Peter Capaldi at the end.
Well, Christopher Eccleston, as you know, has sort of said he wants nothing more to do with Doctor Who ever.
Yes.
So he's pushed to the side. I think David Tennant might make an appearance, but as far as I know, the older Doctors won't be in it. So it won't be like those great episodes like the Three Doctors and the Five Doctors that they did back in the day.
Now, I love this suggestion. Excalibur has to be very high on the list just for sheer period exquisite wonder. Chris Hemsworth has made one Thor film that's been edited six times. That's ridiculous, which is a little cruel, although apparently they were editing that particular one, and apparently they shot a whole lot of the Tom Hiddleston footage at the very end because they were desperate for extra footage and extra scenes. 1300-222-774. Ray's called from Altona with another mythological or legend-type film. Ray, what is it?
Pan's Labyrinth.
Oh, I never saw that. That's Greer. I don't know how to say his name.
Guillermo del Toro.
That's the one. Yeah, I don't know how to say it. It's absolutely amazing. You should put it on your list to see. It's a movie I never get tired of watching. It's brilliant.
A brief description.
It's hard to describe. It's this princess from this netherworld disappears, and lost in time, and it's all become sort of a myth, and then suddenly she reappears as the stepdaughter of a very cruel military leader during the Spanish Civil War.
Right.
And so it's just sort of, she's treated terribly by him and sort of promised the wonders of this world should she be able to get back there, and the trials she goes through to try and get back. It's really incredible. I hope I've described that well.
I think it's an incredible film. It's one of the few films that manages to meld the mythical fairy tale world with a political context, like setting it at the beginning of Francisco Franco's reign and playing off the kind of mythical evil versus the political evil is really quite stunning, and in the context of a coming-of-age film that doesn't talk down to its child character. Wonderful, wonderful,
did
wonderful
Did he go
film.
On to make that terrible Wolfman with Benicio del Toro? Was that him?
No, I don't think so. I think he may have been a producer on that
one. Okay. Look, tons of texts coming in, many of you, of course, mentioning The Princess Bride, which is a beautiful example. Someone mentioning Highlander with the wonderful Queen soundtrack, which I loved as a teenager. I haven't had the bravery to face it again because I fear it might not be as good as my memory tells me. Best ever myth and legend, Conan the Barbarian, the original version. You have to give it that one. They have their own novel value as well. And somebody else reminding me, which we should say, remind people to stay till the end of the credits for an Easter egg re-Thor 2. Yes, there are two great spoilers that I will not spoil in Thor. One is the guest appearance of another character that's hysterical, and do stick around for the very end. There's a teaser for the next flick with a guest appearance of a great actor. And someone mentioning Monty Python and the Search for the Holy Grail. It's from David. I guess so. Yeah, that's part of the genre, isn't it? And Tim's called from Brunswick. Hi, Tim.
Oh, g'day, Raph. How are you going?
Good. What's yours?
The Sword in the Stone, the kids' animation from...
That's Disney, isn't it?
Yeah, a long time ago.
I don't remember it. When did you see it? Like 30 years ago?
Yeah, pretty much.
I wonder if it stands the test of time.
You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
We're talking films of myth and legend, and I have to read this one out because my mother's texted. Cocteau's Orpheus from 1950. She says it's deeply poetic and allegorical, like the myth, black and white, and lasts a lifetime. There you go. Quite a few of you texting into The Dark Crystal and also Labyrinth, and someone else making a mention that the subway scene was funny in Thor. It was pretty funny, and I hear that's one of the ones that Joss Whedon, the Avengers director, was brought on set to leaven the loaf because it was a little heavy. We'll keep going with your films of myth and legend in a moment. 1300 222 774. You might have heard, though, of In Bob We Trust. Father Bob McGuire, of course, is now part of a film.
I'm going to explain to a senior cleric why we're spending money on the poor. Now, to me, that's offensive, not only intellectually, but religiously and spiritually.
Oh, you might sack me.
He has a great understanding of what disadvantage is, like a heartfelt understanding of those things.
Oh, I don't know if he can sack me.
It was a definite decision on the part of the hierarchy that Father Bob should retire. There was no question he had to retire.
If you fake a miracle, like, oh, my God, can you believe this statue is... Mary is crying herself.
We're not beyond
tears,
that, comrade.
That's how sad she is.
No,
I'm leaving.
We're not beyond that.
Cult hero of Melbourne, Father Bob McGuire, with a guest appearance clearly there by his co-host, John Safran, in Bob We Trust. Josh, what's the... I have no idea. I've only seen the publicity, so I don't even know the basis of the film. What is it?
I love this. I love this film, comrade. This is a documentary that centres around the Bob receiving his marching orders in 2009, right, agreeing to resign at the beginning of 2012. So the documentary spans that. It's sort of the link that runs the thread of the documentary. But on the side of that, we have kind of greater themes, or the way in which the film really engages with him as a personality. We get a bit of backstory and back history. But really, I think what's at the core of this documentary is this question about what's the purpose, or the social purpose and value of religion. And for Bob, it's clearly about community, about relationships.
Oh, so it's got broad aims, this film.
Yeah, it does. And it really weaves those themes through him personally, sort of his crusade, and, you know, the sort of the very Australian underdog story, but also through... There's a couple of other sort of characters who weave in and out that are working in and around the parish, including one young man who we get a bit of backstory about. His sort of, you know, he was sort of rescued from the street, basically or Father Bob was sort of instrumental in that. So we get these characters referenced to sort of describe, I guess, the value of what he sees as his role in the community and why he wants to stay on, why he's not prepared to just sort of go down silently. In terms of the way in which this film was made, one, it has a lovely Australian sense of humour, which I think Bob has that in that sort of eclectic, you know, like you said, he's such a sort of icon. But the opening montage, if nothing else, and this film has a lot to recommend it, but the opening montage of this film is fantastic, where we get Bob describing the history of religion in about 3 minutes, and it's cut in this rapid-paced editing style where we get glimpses of famous paintings, famous scenes from things like Ben-Hur, The Ten Commandments, and with this wonderful sort of voiceover where he's describing, in this very laconic style, the entire history of religion, who fought who, over what land, etc., leading up to the present day. And it was joyous. It's like something out of Monty Python. Right. And the film manages to capture through its style his personality. I mean, a lot of the interviews have this sort of staccato sensibility, like it's almost they've taken up taken out every gap between every pause, every sort of dramatic pause. So it's in that rapid fire sort of scattershot approach, which kind of characterizes his persona.
Who made the film?
It's directed by Lynn-Marie Milburn. I'm not too sure about what she's done before. I think she did. She was involved in the documentary about Roland S. Howard, autoluminescent. The producer was Richard Lowenstein, who did Dogs in Space. So look, it's got some strong and again sort of Melbourne-based talent, and of course John Safran, who I have a lot of time for. And they're such a wonderful sort of odd couple. In fact, a number of scenes shot in this very studio, so that's very meta of us.
It's the one next door.
Well, it's broadly studio, not in this very seat, sadly. But interspersed, we have this wonderful ode to Bergman's The Seventh Seal.
Where
we have the two of them in this black and white sort of laconic pose on the beach playing chess, and Safran is death, and Bob is the priest in turmoil.
Oh, right.
And you keep coming back to these questions that Safran poses in that very kind of Safran-esque style.
Wow.
I loved it. It's such a joyous film. And the sad thing is it's only playing at the Cinema Nova in Carlton. It got its premiere at MIFF, and I think it was funded partially through the MIFF Premiere Fund and through crowdfunding, through the Possible.
Right. Oh, really?
Yeah, so 300-odd people put money in, and it's a wonderful product. So, yeah, definitely recommend going along to see it.
So Thor 2, we've been speaking about, that's on wide release. In Bob We Trust is the name of the Father Bob trailer. Just let me zoom through these texts. There's tons of them. Someone's remembering Jabberwocky, my tribute to you. Thank you for that. The straight-to-video movie Merlin with Sam Neill. Absolutely loved it. Always felt magical to me. That's from Paul in the Hills. Jason and the Argonauts. Classic. Watch it again.
Ray Harryhausen. I love that stop-motion animation.
Old-fashioned stuff. Karina says, has anyone ever adapted the Stephen Donaldson books? I don't think so. Someone is mentioning a film I have never seen. La Belle et la Bête by Jean Cocteau. Willow,
Beauty
Crystal.
And the Beast.
Oh, okay.
Wonderful.
How old's that?
Oh, that's 40s.
Oh, okay. Wow.
It's good. It's an amazing film. Yeah, right. It played at MIFF a couple of years ago during the retrospective.
Right.
So hunt it down.
And also Willow, Crystal, and Never Ending Story, which was the very first film I saw at the movies. That's from Pip in Beaconsfield. And Rowena in Thornbury has a text for us as well. I loved the Father Bob film. It was very emotional. You can see Josh's reviews. You can review them and read them again at filmology.com. And Josh is very good too. He cuts out the audio and tweets it, and I retweet it. So if you want to listen back, you can.